Welcome to Cloudlandia.
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Jackson.
There we are.
You've triggered me. I'm now looking for hits on Cloudlandia, so I just sent you one.
Oh, really? Okay, cool. What's happened?
Well, look at it. I mean, it arrived as a Cloudlandia message.
Okay. All the way through Cloudlandia. Another Cloudlandia hero story. Okay.
Yeah. He's a rapper, and in the last 30 days, he's gone to number one on all music genres on iTunes Music. He's a he's a guy.
I know about
Edmonton. Songs. He's from Tom McDonald. Yeah.
Yes, I know about him. So I didn't know the story. So what's the story? This is very interesting.
Well, you know, he's been rapping, writing, and rapping for probably about six. I think he's in his seventh year now. He's from Edmonton, Alberta, and he was a wrestler too. He's a wrestler, so he's got all the right credentials, you know. Because rapping is kind of a form of wrestling, actually. You know, it's wrestling with the English language, I guess. And anyway, but he's just goes after all the political correctness stuff that's coming out, and he turns all the political correctness into stuff to show his notion, you know, his notion of what's at stake here. But one of the things that it illustrates to me that it's a free medium for anyone who can write something that's interesting to other people and develop an audience and a following. And so far he's had 10 million in just a month with the video that goes with, he's had 10 million downloads. And
I was just
every time that he gets panned by some, you know, someone who doesn't like his thoughts, doesn't like his words, doesn't like his music, he gets about 50,000 more followers the moment every time somebody hits that.
Oh, this is great. Yeah, you know, I remember.
And he controls the whole thing. He has no agent. He has no production, you know, and everything else. He's just taking advantage of Cloudlandia.
This is great. I'm reading this article, and you know what stood out to me? Like this, I'm just scanning through the article that you sent me, because I think the song that I saw was called No Lives Matter, and it was a thing, but there was one line in the song that really stood out to me, and it's the one they think they mention in the article. He says, they say bacteria is proof of life on Mars, but a heartbeat isn't proof of life on Earth, which is kind of, really interesting, right? Bacteria is proof of life on Mars, but a heartbeat isn't proof of life on Earth. Weird. That's an interesting perspective, right?
Well, like but what's really interesting, he's like a really good speechwriter. You're like, you know, John Kennedy, JFK, and Ronald Reagan. They had great lines. They had great lines, but what they had was great speechwriters. And he's like a great speechwriter because he can take thoughts, do contrasts with thoughts.
Yes.
You know, like, so all the, you know, the top of the political conversation and the cultural conversation in the U.S. is just pulling out the terms, and then he's putting them to rap music, which is kind of hard for his enemies to go after him, because rap is kind of like, can you cancel a rap artist?
Right. That's the thing. It's kind of a brilliant package in that if he was a blogger or a vlogger doing videos and just saying the things that he's saying on, you know, just in normal voice, just talking them, sharing the ideas, it would be a different, you know, then he's a pundit kind of thing compared to rapping them. He's an artist, and it's a really interesting
Well, the other comparison. Thing is that they're sort of the, you know, basketball players and rappers. White guys can't do it. You know, they can't jump and they can't do rap. But, you know, and we've had only one, you know, who really made it over the last. Eminem is the only one who became famous.
Come on now, don't tell Vanilla Ice.
Yeah, well, you know, it's not my genre, but
okay. Yeah, exactly. Okay. I can tell that you're not a hip hop historian.
Okay, you just expanded my knowledge by 100%. So
there you go.
So, but this guy's got creds, you know. I mean, you can kind of follow what he's saying, you know. Like, I mean, it's got a. The other thing, it's got kind of a point, you know, I mean, every one of his, you use the word blog, these are kind of rap blogs.
Yeah, that's right. It's an interesting expression. It's funny how what package you put something in shapes the reception of it. It's almost like he's in that bubble of a rap song that it's received differently than it is if it was an op-ed on the New York Times.
Yep.
You know, that's a real.
So everybody who's listening, you know, just go to Wikipedia. The Wikipedia hasn't taken him down yet. You know, they haven't found a way to take him down yet.
He hasn't been canceled.
Tom McDonald from Edmonton, Edmonton, Alberta, and you know, and. I just find it. I mean, we're developing the uniqueness of opportunity and the uniqueness of vision, capability, and reach. That's your formula. And he's got a vision, he's got capability, and he's got reach.
Mm-hmm. This is interesting because it's saying, yeah, he does. He owns the masters. He writes and performs the music. His lovely and talented girlfriend directs and produces all his videos. They don't need anybody else. They have one other employee who also contributes to the overall effort. But with three people, Tom McDonald doing better financially with total artistic freedom than artists creating music under a record label. And he's delivering the highest quality content in this industry. It's a really, that's amazing. You know, like this is, I'm so excited, Dan, that I think we've got a really great thing here, what you and I are doing as cartographers of Cloudlandia here, you know? I mean, naming it and then observing the migration and the things that are happening. And this is
It's almost like we're bringing tribal superstars back to London to introduce them to the King and Queen of England.
Wow, yeah. I mean, really, that's something, isn't it? Right. Look at that.
Yeah. Hey, look at this one. You thought the last one was good. Wait till, you know, it's like the old Bob Newhart, you know, he would do his conversations with historical characters. Bob Newhart, 1950, 1960.
Right.
And one was with Sir Walter Raleigh, and he's sort of the PR man or the advertising man for PR. Yeah. I think he's sort of the PR agent for Sir Walter Raleigh. And, you know, and he takes a phone call and it's his secretary and she says, Nutty Wald is here again. Oh, geez, Nutty Wald. Okay. Hey, Wald, how you doing?
Yeah.
What do you got for you're back. What do you got for us this time? Tobacco. All right. Well, what's tobacco?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're really funny, but we're bringing funny things back from a new world. And we're not only bringing maps back, but we're telling people what the key skills are of exploring the new land.
So this is great. I heard a new word this week. This week is the first time I've kind of looked into it because it feels like it's heating up, a new term that is NFT. Have you heard? Do you know about that? What an NFT is?
No, I don't.
So neither did I. And I'd heard the word, just kind of heard the term bandied about. But it stands for non-fungible token. And what it is it's a new thing that's showing up on the blockchain that allows someone to own a digital asset. Like to own, somebody bought there's some art that's happening where somebody bought a piece of digital art that they paid, you know, $1 million or more for, mm-hmm. to have the ownership of this, even though it's digitally available, they own this one certified one of it. And
yes.
The provenance, you know, are thinking ahead now that the provenance of digital art will be documented in the blockchain going forward, that the authenticity of it is something. So people are selling, like what's buying, there's a pixelated art picture called a crypto, I forget if it was a crypto monkey or something like that, that was this guy paid for, and it's just a simple digital image. Somebody's buying some Pokemon things like this that have value. Somebody paid, I should remember the numbers, but a significant amount of money for an 8-second video clip of LeBron James, doing some dunk that it's as a sports collectible kind of thing. You own this digital thing. Mm-hmm. So imagine, for instance, imagine it'd be like owning the rights to an image kind of thing. Pre-internet, you would have mm-hmm. tangible assets where somebody would, like, if you, there's a Pruder Films or something, right? Like, or some, you know, when you got the physical film of something, or a physical picture of something, that you would buy the rights to it and own the master, the negatives of the thing. Because there were physicals, a physical asset. Well, in the digital world, there's not that. So this is what these non-fungible tokens are about, that yeah. they're something that can mark internet ownership, digital yeah. ownership of something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've got several takes on that now that
I do too. Like, I was just thinking about how, what struck me was, because they're thinking about all the number of uses that you could have for, some people are selling songs, like mm-hmm. and I remember a few. Do you remember?
I've got one of my clients yeah. who has a hedge fund and just buying parts of artists.
You know what would be fascinating? Their catalogs.
And what they are, if you think of the long tail that developed in relationship yeah. to yeah. internet marketing. That yeah. you have a straight line at the left-hand side that goes right up to the top. And mm-hmm. all the great stars are on a straight line. In other words, if they bring out something, they immediately yeah. have 2 million, 3 million people. And then there's this curve that goes down to nothing. So mm-hmm. they're the stars. And what this is a 30-year client and strategic coach named Greg Guichon. And what he discovered through some people who really knew the recording industry, that if you come about halfway down the curve, the long tail, mm-hmm. and you take about a 20% cut out of it and say it's like at the 40% to 60% mark, they discovered that there's artists and, musicians who write things that yeah. in the first year, let's say they'll sell 10,000, they'll sell 10,000 songs, okay, uh-huh. which doesn't make them a star. Stars sell millions.
Yeah.
But in their fifth year and every other year, they still sell 10,000 songs. So they're like,
they're like a cow. Yeah.
They're a self-milking cow, and every, uh-huh. you know, and every year they get 10,000 gallons out of this. So they don't purchase all of this. They just purchase part of it. He's got a mutual uh-huh. fund that he's put together, and right. he's got about 30 or 40 of these 20 to 40% artists. And it gives them instant. First of all, they get cash flow right off the bat. There's a purchase price. And then because it's in this fund, it's propelling their sales going forward. And then they get whatever royalties they were getting before. But so it's not total ownership. It's just part of ownership.
Right.
And so what it means is that things in the digital world are valuable, but you've got two problems. How do you trust that it's real? And the second thing is, how do you protect it against getting stolen by someone else? And what mm-hmm. you're talking with non-fungible
tokens.
And what fungible means, it's not a currency of exchange. Okay.
Right.
So the U.S. dollar is the number one currency in the world, and everybody has strange notions about this. And they said, well, you know, it's not going to be forever. And I said, well, it will be forever if everybody uses it. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so if you say, well, the Chinese will have a currency that's more powerful than the Americans. And I said, well, just do a test. Go around the world to 10,000 different people and say, we'll give you $10,000 in American currency or $10,000 worth of Chinese currency. Which one would you take? And I don't know anyone who would take the Chinese currency. And that's why the U.S. currency is more fungible.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what you're saying is that digital things now can become as secure in knowing that they're real and who the owner is as physical things, because they have blockchain on diamonds now, the provenance mm-hmm. of diamonds. You know when a diamond was mined, where it was mined, under what conditions it was mined, when it was developed, and who has owned the diamond right up until now. A painting on the wall. You can do that with a painting on the wall. So you're mm-hmm. you're applying this to digital property, digital creations.
Yeah. And I wonder, I saw in the article that Jack Dorsey from Twitter is mm-hmm. is selling the first tweet, an image of the first tweet on Twitter, and mm-hmm. that he sent. And you think, well, that's interesting. Like, that's a bit of internet history right there. And I started thinking about, like, imagine if Taylor Swift is who came to my mind because I'd seen another article about her, but imagine if Taylor Swift sold the digital an NFT of the image of the lyrics that she wrote in her journal for a song, the first time, like the first words that she had about this song. That mm-hmm. everything, it's like documenting everything now. And I don't know how you create or activate an NFT for something, because I'm very, again, very new into it. And I'm seeing all this buzz around it. I'm in a group that's been, everybody's talking about it in a group text thing. I haven't had a chance to really look through all the things, but I wanted to see if you had heard about it.
Well, I'll give you an example of this that goes back almost 100 years, and this is the first, this is actually the first ad that was ever on radio, and this happened at 5:15 on Monday, August 28th, 1922. Okay, and this was New York radio station, WEAF, and someone came on and said this, "Let me enjoin upon you, as you value your health and your hopes and your home happiness, get away from the solid masses of brick. The meager opening admitting a slant of sunlight is mockingly called a light shaft, and where children grow up starved for a run over a patch of grass and the sight of a tree." Okay, so that was the first recorded radio advertisement. And what it was selling a new housing development in the suburbs of New York called Hawthorne Court.
That's interesting.
So Jack Twitter's first tweet, well, this is the first ad. So if they actually have this recorded, they can make it into an NFP.
That's an interesting. It's funny, like I look at those things, like you're looking great moments in Cloudlandia, I mean, documenting the things that, I think this is really going to go.
If we had recorded our first discussion at Le Select Bistro at lunchtime, and I brought up the idea of procrastination being valuable, yeah, and then you saying, "Well, let's create a podcast and we'll call it The Joy of Procrastination." And I said, "How can we do that?" And I said, "We can do it tomorrow." And I said, "Okay, let's do it tomorrow."
Yeah,
and that was recorded, and there you go.
I mean, could you imagine if that was the thing? I mean, it's a really interesting way of thinking about documenting. Like, imagine artists who are creating songs or out there the first time they demo a song. Imagine, I don't know how that, I've got to get the rest of what the thing is, because I wonder if you could take this digital asset, but imagine if Taylor Swift played the song into her iPhone or whatever, like she normally does, to get a demo of it or to just record the idea of it. Imagine, without knowing that that's going to be a hit song. And then after it becomes a hit song and she, it becomes number one, then what would be the value of that Genesis moment, that recording, that you could own the raw translation, the first time the thought goes from analog to digital, the first time that's the birth date of something, right? Like when you first digitize it.
Well, one of the things that you're suggesting in this discussion is the blockchain provenance of.
Yeah, that's what I wonder is, how do you activate?
In other words, there's got to be some sort of almost barcoding scanner, that when you say this is Taylor Swift's first, these are her first thoughts about her first hit. You have to. You say, okay, let's find Taylor. And she has to have it recorded somewhere. In other words, that has to be recorded. And you run the provenance, the blockchain provenance scanner over it and say, yeah, that's true. that's true.
This is actually
true. You know,
like I wonder if this is going to be the digital equivalent of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
I wonder if this is going to be the digital equivalent of. You remember the old thing? If you have an idea or something, to send it in a sealed envelope, certified to yourself. You know, with the date stamp and all of that stuff. The poor man's patent kind of thing, or proof of.
It counts in the law, because I'm going through this right now in the first really big litigation that we've ever done. Mm-hmm. With that, and we have dates, times, and witnesses for every one of our, every one of our concepts and every one of our thing. We can say exactly when this was first made public and who the witnesses were for this. We've got the date and everything for each of our new ideas, and that constitutes copyright protection. You know, it's copyright protection. Yeah, that's.
So interesting then, that whole as a vision, as a visionary in the vision column, that these things are going to be potentially very valuable as learning the ways of documenting ideas and thinking that way. I've been thinking particularly about it as the algorithms, you know.
Well, you know what makes something valuable?
Tell me.
Somebody's willing to write a check for it.
That's true. That is absolutely true. the exchange.
Yeah. Well, it's the pricing mechanism. There's a concept called the pricing mechanism of the marketplace. And it says things are worth what someone somewhere is willing to pay you for this. You know,
is that what the invisible hand of the market is?
Yeah. It was like Mike Trout, baseball player, Los Angeles Angels.
Yes.
Signed the biggest ever contract in the history of baseball. And it was for, I think it's 13 years for $450 million. And that's guaranteed.
Yeah.
I think half of it is guaranteed because they have an injury clause in it.
Yeah.
But for signing, he gets like $45 million. He gets like a tenth of it right up front just for signing the contract. And we were having a discussion in the workshop with some entrepreneurs days after this happened. And they said, the one guy said, you know, I think this is obscene. I have to tell you that America is going to hell. America, you know, you can just tell America is going down by a coal. And I said, why? And he says, a baseball player getting $450 million. And I said, yes, I get that. And he said, there's no baseball player who's worth $450 million. And I said,
oh, boy.
All right. I've got the proof that what you said is not correct.
I got the proof too, exactly.
I got the proof that what you just said is not correct, because somebody just signed a contract, guaranteed a contract for $450 million. So a baseball player, Mike Trout, is worth $450 million. And, you know, it really upset me. He says, well, you got people like school teachers and firemen. Yeah. And I said, nobody signed them. No, but there's no fireman in the world that somebody signed a contract for $450 million. So there's no fireman who is worth a baseball player.
Right.
And it's really hard for people to accept that value is strictly in the eyes of a potential check writer.
Yeah. That's a really interesting thing that you look at, you know, there's only one, you know, that's an interesting thing that, you know, he's probably the greatest baseball player of his generation. And, but he's also pretty anonymous in a lot of ways, like in compared to the great baseball players when we were growing up.
Yeah, he's been on subpar teams. You know, I mean, yeah. He hasn't been. They haven't been playoff teams. They haven't been World Series teams. You know?
Right.
But here's the thing, and this is really interesting. I went back and looked at some statistics, and I said, you know, baseball owners generally are rich people, and they got rich because they knew what they were signing their signature to over a period of 30 or 40 years, and they tend to be really successful at investing in different things and generally more successful than non-successful. But there's a statistic that is absolutely constant, that if you take a ratio between the salary that they're paying their ballplayers and compare it against the value of their baseball team in the marketplace, the ratio in 1950 is the same as the ratio in 2020. There's been no change in the ratio between salaries and value of baseball club in 70 years.
I didn't know that. That's great.
Yeah. This is how they can write a check like that. What it means is that the multiplier of the value of their ball club, if they invest in Mike Trout for $450 million, probably makes their club worth a couple billion dollars.
Yeah.
Because he's an asset in their company.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so. And it's hard for people, you know, who want value and worth to be determined by something other than check writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, by some intangible value or moral value.
Yeah.
But the thing is, there's only, you know, there's, you think about teachers and firemen, collectively, there's an incredible value on, you know, all the teachers and firemen, but they're only impacting a small number of people in their local community. And there's only one.
And only in certain situations.
Yeah.
Not constantly, not day after day, you know.
Right.
Not day after day. I mean, and I'm talking about people's awareness. Maybe firemen are doing something every day that's valuable, but it's not something that's known to the people who are writing tax checks.
I mean, it's interesting. If you think about the category of education and you take the, who would be the equivalent at the top of the game in education, then I bet there are education entrepreneurs that are making a lot of money.
Yeah.
And that's really thing. It's almost like comparing the value of Mike Trout to one, to a little league player in a local league, you know?
Yeah. Well, they have to be, it would be sort of the lowest minor league club where you were actually getting paid.
Right.
And they'd be making, at most, like at the lowest baseball minor leagues, they might be making $20,000 a year.
Exactly. Right.
They'd have to have another job during the off season to, to stay ahead. Okay.
Yeah.
And, so it would be Mike Trout making, somewhere around 13 times, $30,000 or $35,000 a year, $35 million a year, as opposed to $20,000 a year.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. So I wonder people, if you think
well,
about
you know, so
educator.
I'm going to say because I engage with people who say that's absolutely obscene. That's terrible. That just shows a perversion of values in society. And I said, value. I said that's an interesting concept. Let's talk about value. Valuable to who? Valuable to who? So you take Kylie Jenner, first teenage or 20-year-old billionaire in history.
Mm-hmm.
Why is she valuable? So one thing is reach.
That's exactly right. You can't hide that.
Capability. Vision.
Mm-hmm.
So you've introduced a whole new accounting system or measurement system into human affairs for Cloudlandia. The value of somebody in Cloudlandia is a combination of V plus C. V plus C times
V plus C multiplied by reach. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the new algorithm for if you're. So we started this episode of Welcome to Cloudlandia with a report on a rap singer who is now rated number one of all music genres on iTunes. Number one music, 10 million downloads of a video in the last 30 days. He's got vision, he's got C times reach.
Yes. That's amazing, right? That's the thing. He tapped into the Apple, the reach. And you look at those Apple, you look at those reach platforms, like anybody can, this is what's so amazing about it, is that there's never, Cloudlandia welcomes visionaries. That's really the place. That's the message. If we could send the message out to all visionaries that Cloudlandia is a welcoming place. Free land. I'm going to rewatch the Coming to America or whatever, the one with Tom Cruise.
Yeah. What was it
called?
First of all, it's America?
I think it was Coming to America.
It could have been Coming to America, yeah.
But it was about Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise.
The gangs in New York City.
And them coming to, and they were getting out to where they were giving away land. And that was something, you know, like that. Just imagine that. Because I loved how it started in Ireland, I guess, it was either Ireland or England. I think it was Ireland, and he's saying to her, you know, he's got a flyer right there that's telling them that they're giving away free land. And he was like, a new start in America, you know, like that, getting excited about that. And then getting on the boat and getting over there, and then getting on a, you know, horse and getting out to Oklahoma, where they're giving away. And the certain day, the gun goes off. And you can run and stake your claim.
The land rush, the Oklahoma.
The land rush. Yes.
Yeah. 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 Well, here's the thing about it. There's lots of different thoughts about whether, you know, when they get the people come from someplace on the planet, and they have skills and they have knowledge and everything else, and they suddenly take over what you people say, well, that's somebody else's property. But nowhere in any records of, you know, the people who were in North America, I'll just use North America, not South or Central America. Is there any indication that they had any idea of a concept called property? The people who came up had thousands of years of developing the concept of property. So they had a capability. Yes. They had a capability. Yeah. If you lack an idea, are you a victim? Mm-hmm. Let's just use our conversation. Dean, you and I are developing a new idea called Cloudlandia. And you have determined that there's an algorithm that determines your success in Cloudlandia. And it's VCR, vision plus capability times reach equals Cloudlandia success.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you don't know there's a thing called Cloudlandia, and you don't know the algorithm called VCR, and you feel yourself being left out and left behind, are you a victim?
Yeah, that's, are you a victim?
Yeah, because, say, this isn't fair. These people are using something that's not even real, like Cloudlandia. It's not even real. Where is it? I can't mm-hmm. see it. I can't touch it. I can't feel it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, mm-hmm. New kind of reality.
And it's interesting because a lot of these, if you use this analogy, it's kind of like they're, especially the younger generation who's never known anything. Imagine if we were, land-based, mainland, which we are, we're mainland-based most of our lives. And then circa the turn of the century, or the millennium, in 2000, we slowly started making our way into this digital world that, kids that were born after 2006, when the iPad and the, all of those, the digital app world was built in there, they have no frame of reference for an analog life. They're surrounded. So be like asking a fish about how do you like the water? And they'll be, what's water? And they're, that's like these water, kids are surrounded. They're surrounded in Cloudlandia.
Well,
they live in Cloudlandia.
Well, there's the immigrant, what I call the immigrant, the immigrant structure, that immigrants from another place, when they come to a new place, have an incredibly greater appreciation of the new place than people who are born there.
Yes.
I mean, you and I have a greater appreciation of Cloudlandia than kids who were born in Cloudlandia. And the reason is we know the difference between another world and this world.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly my point, that they don't have any frame of reference. And that's where it's, so they're figuring it out. They realize there's nothing new to them, that, hey, I don't have to get a warehouse and make stuff. I can drop ship things. And kids are making hundreds of thousands of dollars drop shipping. They're finding, they're looking online, they're reading the charts and seeing that, hey, this is a popular product. Then they go over to Alibaba and they find, hey, I can buy a boatload of those and bring them over and ship them through Amazon and make a margin on those.
Yeah. It's very interesting. One of our pre-zone clients, Stephen Poulter, he's got a son who I think is now about 13 or 14.
Yeah.
And for at least 4 years, he's been doing exactly what you just said. He's been looking at where you can buy something for pennies on a dollar and sell the something for a dollar. In other words, you find it somewhere else in the world for pennies on the dollar, have it shipped over here and get it, and then fulfill an order where it's a dollar. It costs you 7 cents, but it costs, and somebody will pay you a dollar for something that costs you 7 cents. That's good business. And the other thing he's figured out, that any topic that his teachers teach him in school, that if he goes home and looks it up on YouTube and watches 5 hours of YouTube films, he knows more than his teacher.
Yes. Yeah. One Wikipedia page. And
And he said, Dad, why should I ever have a job and why should I ever go to a school? I figured out the whole system.
Yes. Smart. I knew he was smart the first time I met him.
And Stephen says, I have a hard time asking, I have a hard time answering his question. I said, he says, I haven't yet come up with a satisfactory answer to his question.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. I said the same thing to Philip when he was doing the homeschooling, and we got his eBay business up and running, and he made the first sales. And I explained to him, and he doesn't get it right now. It's still about games and going to real school. But I said, dude, you have the secret to life right now. You've figured it out. You are literally self-sustaining right now. You could be. I said, most people go through their entire lives with their umbilical cord in their hand, looking for somewhere to plug it in. And the whole reason that they go to school is so that they're able to convince somebody to let them plug in their umbilical cord so they can give them money and a job.
That is a piece of paper that gives you your capability. Yeah. It's not that you have a capability, it's that you have a piece of paper.
Yes. And I said, you've got this thing. Now you literally, from right here, you have the ability to make money. It's like literally without depending on anybody. It's really it's crazy.
Well, it's very interesting. Something happened in December, which I think is a historic moment. And Google, or Alphabet, the holding company, announced that it would no longer be necessary for job applicants to Google to have a college degree.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, that's really, really interesting. That's the end of a long, long era. A long era just came to an end with one announcement, because since about the mid-60s, that was the only way you could get a really good job and move upward in the world is with a college diploma. So 1965, 2020, that's 55 years, and a 55-year era just ended.
I've long said that, Dan. Any kid that's disciplined enough to get into a top university, meaning they've got the high SAT scores, they've got the grades, the GPA, they've proven that they're disciplined executors and can do that, that it would make sense for a company to hire, instead of those kids paying $100,000 to go to college for the next 4 years, it would be so much better for the companies to hire and train them over that 3 or 4 year period. The way it changes, it's signing. They could have signing bonuses or vesting that come out and go this 4 years with us. And at the end of 4 years, you get this, almost like the military bonuses, or whatever. You get you got to commit for 4 years. Well, imagine if you could do that. Imagine the company, like, as the workforce is getting more and more competitive, and it's not like they're yearning in university the actual things that they're going to be applying on the job anyway. Interesting.
Well, here's an interesting story. Cameron Johnson. Remember Cameron Johnson?
I just saw Cameron a year ago. When I was in Phoenix, he was in, Joe and I went and had brunch with him and a few other people.
Yeah. So anyway, he's 14 years old. I don't know, Cameron might be 30 now, but he's 14 years old, and he's the number one seller of Beanie Babies on the internet.
Right.
And this goes back. This is the 1990s. 14 years old, and he's the number one seller of Beanie Babies on the internet. Okay. And then about 2 years later, maybe 3 years later, he is hired by Toshiba of Japan to come to Japan and give a series of lectures to parents of why they should allow their children to have a computer in a Japanese home, okay, for a whole summer. So he's 16, 17 years old. And when he's 20, he's the youngest entrepreneur that we've ever had in the Strategic Coach program, because he created a way for secondhand sales of Fords for his father's Ford dealership. He's from Roanoke in Virginia. And he came up with a way of getting customers in for secondhand sales. And he set the record for Ford in the history of Ford Motor Company going back almost a century. They sold in 1 year the most secondhand Fords of all time, and he did it strictly through the internet. Okay, so Richard Rossi, great friend of ours. We were in Washington, D.C., and we were invited to Richard and Lisa's home, and we were having dinner, and Cameron was there. And so Cameron, we were talking at dinner, and he said, you know, he says, I did a year of university, but he said I dropped out because I was too busy with my online businesses. And he says, do you think I should go and get a college degree? And I said, why would you be thinking that? Mm-hmm. And he said, I don't know if I could get a job at a really good corporation without a college degree. And I said, well, there's two considerations. No, you cannot get a job at a major corporation without a college degree. And number two, given your capabilities and entrepreneurial success, why would you even be thinking of getting a job at a major corporation?
And what was his reply?
He says, I don't know. He says, you know, there's the whole social thing and everybody. And I says, everybody that you'll want to meet in your future, Cameron, will first of all be wanting to meet you.
Right. Yeah. I think it's funny though, but I think about like in my
but that
group.
Shows you, but it sort of shows you the emotional and psychological hold to the past that. Mm-hmm. Lots of things in our society. I've never heard you talk. I have the foggiest idea, Dean, where you went to college, if you went to college. And I would,
yeah, I'm a dropout.
I would not know that.
Well. Yeah,
I would
I'm
not
a dropout.
Know that about any. I would not know that about any entrepreneur in the Strategic Coach program. I have the foggiest idea if they went to college.
I was just thinking about that in my circle of entrepreneurial friends, it's very rare that somebody actually went to college or finished college. And so I think about,
or even brings it up as a topic.
Right. I wonder if we were to look at the Free Zone, members, and to see. How many of us were college dropouts? I bet there's a lot. It's funny.
Or they graduated, but it's meaningless. You know, it's kind
yeah.
of like
I mean, that's really it's a, yeah. Like you think about and all of the well, I guess the doctors and. Probably the a lot of the financial advisors or
the lawyers, the accountants,
the lawyers, professionals,
but they're not in Free Zone because of their credentials.
Yeah, it's not because we graduated magna cum laude.
Yeah,
as they say, right.
Yeah. And this, what we can say, here we are, we're in, in 2021, and we're in March of 2021, about a year's worth of the COVID, the great COVID occurrence on the planet mm-hmm. Earth. And Dean Jackson and Dan Sullivan have just said, well, we can safely say that the era of the importance of the college degree has probably reached its peak somewhere before we're talking today. In other words, maybe it's the last year, maybe it's the last 5 years, but the importance mm-hmm. of having a college degree for your future success, we're beyond the age of the importance of the college degree.
Mm-hmm. And I think because that the rules
of Cloudlandia of B plus yes. C times R is yep. the new success formula.
Yeah. And I think we're long, I think we're seeing everything crumble. The, I think this year has proven the, geography is less, mainland geography is less important in Cloudlandia. It really doesn't have any play. Because I think about that, I really, it dawned on me, I think I shared with you last week, that I realized now I have not been more than 90 minutes by car away from my home in over a year now.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been to Orlando, I've been to Sarasota, that's it.
Well, that's I've been 3 hours.
Yeah, you've been to your cottage, right?
Yeah.
But isn't that, we have been alive and thriving in Cloudlandia
Actually, we've been thriving because of that restriction. We've mm-hmm. actually been thriving because of the restriction, yes. not in spite of the restriction.
Yes, I agree. I think that's absolutely true.
That a phrase Peter Diamandis said, everybody thinks that creativity is thinking outside of the box. He says it's actually probably a factor of thinking in a smaller box.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And on fewer things. It's progress. Ben Hardy had a, I'll just end on this, Dan. Ben Hardy this week sent out one of his emails was a gaping void image that had this cartoon was one thing is what changes your life is what will change your life. And it was, he was talking about progress is, and I've seen this with essentialism, but he said it in his video that progress is 20 steps in one direction versus one step in 20 directions.
Yeah.
That's an interesting, that's part of that creativity.
Well, do you remember the movie City Slickers with Billy Crystal?
I do, yeah. The Secret to Life.
Yeah, and in it, Billy Crystal is very, very nervous, anxious, paranoid city slicker, goes to a dude ranch, and the guy who runs the trip into the wild for the city slickers is an old Hollywood
Jack Palance.
By the name of Jack Palance. Mm-hmm. And at a certain point, he says to the Billy Crystal character, he says, I'm going to tell you what the secret of the universe is. And he sticks up his finger, and Billy Crystal says, your finger is the secret of the universe?
Yeah.
It's one, it's one. I mean, I mentioned the guy that we both know from Israel, who could teach mm-hmm. people with no musical training how to make their living out of playing piano in 3 years if they just go through his training. And he says, I can apply this to anything. And I said, yeah, but your challenge is to apply it to one thing. And I said, yes. You know, being good at everything is not the secret. Being really great at one thing is really the secret.
That's it.
Dick.
Well,
anyway,
all right.
Do I get a Cloudlandia reward for bringing an example of VCR?
Yes. This is going to go on your permanent record.
Oh, good.
We keep permanent records in non-fungible format here. It's going to be a gold star on your non-fungible record here.
Yep. Whew, I feel so good because
I'll forward it to the administrators. Let the authorities know.
Yeah, and make sure that my achievement is protected by blockchain.
That's right, exactly. I love it.
I want it encrypted that this actually happened and I was approved by someone who's in a position to give a ticket.
I like it.
All right.
Okay, Dan. We'll talk to you next week, same time.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Dean. Bye.
Okay. Bye. Thanks.